Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Hardcore is a new series from Heritage Radio Network. Over six episodes, we're taking a close look at the rebirth of American cider.
Really, it wasn't until about 10 years ago that cider started to be revitalized in the United States.
From the science of fermentation.
So yeast, it's a fungus, it's a unicellular fungus.
To the magic of terroir.
What really excites us is thinking about communicating that very sort of spiritual aspect of knowing a piece of land.
We're setting aside our cider donuts to gain a deeper understanding of this singular beverage.
I love a cider donut. You don't have to have a cider donut with your cider, and I will die on that point.
Subscribe to Hardcore wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is What Doesn't Kill You, Food Industry Insights. I'm your host, Katie Kiefer. Today, we're going to talk about workers in the dairy industry. I have two wonderful guests with me in the studio. Rebecca Fuentes, who is the lead organizer for the Workers' Center of Central New York, and her colleague, Crispin Hernandez, who is also an organizer with the Workers' Center of Central New York. These folks work in the dairy industry primarily, right? Or do you work with other agricultural industries? I didn't even ask you that before we started.
Que si trabajamos con otros trabajadores, no nada más con los de lecherías. Sí, ¿verdad?
Correcto.
Correcto.
Yeah, we work with many other workers. And our organization is called the Workers Center of Central New York. And it includes any low-wage workers, which could be farm workers, it could be urban workers, anyone. But our job has been focused, Crispin and myself, on dairy farm workers.
Okay.
It's part of, so it's kind of like a campaign that we
sure.
have participated
okay.
in.
Okay. So, Crispin, you have a really interesting story. You are from Mexico.
Tú tienes una historia muy interesante. Tú eres de México.
You came to the United States.
Y veniste a los Estados Unidos.
You found your way to New York State.
Encontraste tu manera de llegar a estado de Nueva York.
And you worked at a large farm called the Marks Farm. Where is that located?
En una lechería que se llama Marks Farm. ¿Dónde está?
¿Dónde está?
El rancho se queda en el norte
de Albany.
De centro de Nueva York.
The north of central New York.
So north of Albany, even higher, even farther north than that.
We'll say north. West.
Northwest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what county that is, but
it's Lewis County.
Lewis County. Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. Mm-hmm. And Mark's Farm is a really big farm.
That's es una rancho muy grande.
Sí.
So así es.
Like 10,000 cows.
Como 10,000 vacas.
Ay, más o menos, sí.
More or less 10,000 cows. Mm-hmm. 10,000 dairy
a little
cows.
Bit less.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what did you do?
¿Y qué hacías?
What was your trabajo?
Lo que hacía es a ordeñaba las vacas a 6 días a la semana, 12 horas diarias, y eso es lo que hacía.
Milk the cows 6 days a week.
6 days a week.
12-hour days.
12-hour days. Mm-hmm. Do you mind if I ask what the wage was?
Si, ¿te preocupa si te pregunto cuánto te pagaban?
No, está bien.
Está bien. So how much?
¿Cuánto?
Cuando entré en 2012, me pagaron lo que es el salario federal, que es $7.25.
Federal minimum wage.
Federal minimum wage in 2012, which was $7.25.
$7.25. Mm-hmm. So, and how long did you work at the farm?
¿Y cuánto tiempo trabajaste en el rancho?
Trabajé como 3 años.
Three years. Yeah. And you're no longer working at the farm. You became an organizer. What happened? You had an accident?
Ya no trabajas en el rancho. Te convertiste en un organizador. ¿Qué pasó? ¿Tuviste un accidente?
Después de mi accidente que me pasó en el 2012, yo seguí trabajando en el rancho.
After an accident that I had in 2012, I kept working at the farm.
Were you injured by a cow or by machinery?
¿Cómo te lastimaste?
Me lastimé porque yo estaba en la parla aprendiendo a ordeñar las vacas.
I was at the parlor learning to milk the cows.
Okay.
Es mi primera vez ordeñar las vacas.
The first time with the cattle. Mm-hmm.
Y como mencioné, pues el otro trabajador que estaba conmigo me estaba enseñando, pero los patrones no pusieron una persona especial que me diera un entrenamiento perfecto.
The other worker who was there, a coworker, he's the one who was training me, but there was no one that just specifically for training or the employer training me.
So you had no, essentially what you're saying is you didn't have any real formal training in how to hook the cow's udder to the máquina. How to handle the cow.
Básicamente no te dieron un entrenamiento así profesional de que cómo utilizar las máquinas y eso. ¿Y qué te pasó?
Sí, por falta de entrenamiento, pero lo que me pasó y es de que yo estaba echando spray o yodo.
So what happened? Yeah, it was lack of training, but what I was doing is I was spraying the udders of the cow with iodine.
Right, with disinfectant.
Lo que es las tetas de las vacas.
You know, the udder of the cow.
Pero right. Por accidente venía una vaca y como que ella como brincó y yo no alcancé como quitar la mano.
So in this, what happened is there was another cow that was coming in and it just kind of like jumped. On my hand.
Ahí es donde pisó a la vaca mi mano con el piso. Y es
donde she jumped on your hand and your hand was on the floor.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So your hand was crushed mm-hmm. by the foot of the cow.
Yes.
Sí. Yeah. Wow. And did you have to have surgery?
¿Tuviste que tener cirugía o qué pasó?
No, después de eso yo seguí trabajando, pero yo busqué la manera, fui al hospital y atendieron mi mano, pero yo fui por mi cuenta. Los patrones no.
So later on, I kept working, but eventually I went to the hospital. I had to go because you had broken
a bone.
Yeah, but the employer did not. ¿Tú crees que te quebraste un hueso o qué fue lo que pasó?
Estaba sangrando muchísimo, me lastimé.
It was bleeding
me lastimé
a lot.
Bien feo.
Oh, my. It was a very hard. I mean, ¿aquí tienes? Mm-hmm. ¿Esto es?
Cicatrice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Me lastimé mucho, estaba sangrando mucho y me tardó varios meses que se recupere.
It was several months for it to recover.
Pero jeez. Así seguía
but
yo
I
trabajando.
Kept working.
So, of course, it didn't get better because you had to keep working.
Por supuesto, no se mejoraba rápidamente porque tenías que seguir trabajando.
Sí, y fue en el invierno, incluso cuando iba yo a lavar los bebederos donde toman las vacas.
So I remember when I would go and clean the
stall.
Containers where the cows drink water.
Oh, yeah.
Pero al momento de meter mi mano a lavar esos a donde toman las vacas, por ejemplo, que mi mano lo tenía como lastimado y con el frío sentía yo como un dolor muy, muy fuerte.
So when I had to clean those things and I had to, you know, do that work, it was very cold, and it was in the winter, and so it was very, my hand was very hurt.
Sounds terrible. So, yeah, like serious, and I can see the scars on your hand. So then eventually you brought a lawsuit against Mark Farms because the patron was not going to offer you medical care.
So eventualmente tú trajiste una demanda contra los dueños porque no te dieron porque no te atendieron. No es por eso.
No, is that not what happened?
No, there's more story to that. There's more.
Después de eso lo que como le digo, la situación que vi de Genaro, lo que me pasó.
Yo creo que ya no estaba en la... You were not on the talk, right?
No, because I was in
okay,
here
so
doing
the interview. No asumas que ella estuvo escuchando todo.
Yeah, no porque... lo escucho. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Entonces, tenemos que explicarle.
Ok. lo que pasó aquí es de que yo veía tantas injusticias en el rancho, los más mal maltrato de los patrones, por ejemplo, que no me llevaron a, por ejemplo, a después de los años que vivía, yo veía que eso era muy injusto. Y como en 2015, el manager atacó a uno de mis compañeros.
Okay, stop.
So what happened is other things. So I saw a lot of injustices. And I remember, for example, in 2015, one of my coworkers was... physically assaulted by one of the supervisors.
Y sabiendo que tenemos derecho, eso para mí no me gustó y por eso pedí la ayuda de Centro de Trabajadores y Centro de Justicia y otras organizaciones que apoyan esa injusticia.
Knowing that, you know, we have rights and I wanted to do something, I got in touch and I asked for support from the Worker Center and another organization, Worker Justice Center, to do something.
Let me ask you, how many workers, how many Mexicans or non, you know, immigrant workers are there on this farm? And are there other workers besides guys like you from Mexico or Guatemala or, you know, Central America?
Déjame preguntarte más o menos cuántos trabajadores hay en este rancho o de Guatemala o de México o de otras partes.
La mayoría de los trabajadores, hay como 60, pero la mayoría son de Centroamérica y por ejemplo, los trabajadores inmigrantes hacen el trabajo más pesado en el rancho.
So there are about 60 Latino workers and they do the hardest job.
They do the hardest jobs.
But there are other American workers too.
Uh-huh.
But they usually do the other jobs like, you know, working with the machinery, other kinds of jobs. But what we would consider very physically demanding, working with the cows, you know, is by the Latino workers.
So right, and Latino workers probably. I'm making an assumption. But am I to understand that basically Latino workers were kept in those lowest paying jobs or the lowest, the hardest jobs? Meanwhile, American workers were allowed to advance? Or was it more fair than that or not fair?
Sí, los trabajadores, nosotros los trabajadores inmigrantes recibíamos a... menos salario, pero hacíamos el trabajo más pesado en el rancho y más importante, por ejemplo, la producción de la leche.
Yeah, I think we do the most
the hardest jobs for the least amount of money. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. Okay, that's good.
And that's the most important work, the production.
It is. I mean, without you guys, obviously you're not going to be milking any cows.
No se ordeñaría ninguna vaca, ¿no?
So, mm-hmm. So you were aware that there are protections for you.
Pero tú sabes que había protecciones para ti.
But those protections were obviously not being offered by the company.
Protecciones no eran ofrecidas por la compañía.
Right, because you were not given
¿verdad?
Adequate medical treatment.
No te dieron tratamiento adecuado.
You saw worker abuse.
¿Viste los
I'm sorry about the lights
abusados?
In here. I don't know yeah. what that is. We'll just continue in the darkness.
Continuaremos. Se fue la luz.
Fortunately, I can see my questions.
Sí.
So you were aware that there were protections, and so you went to the center for the Worker Center for Central New York. And then, so tell me about the class action or the lawsuit that you guys brought.
De la demanda que trajimos.
Sobre la demanda, eso salió el trabajo de, como yo, mi experiencia como trabajador y como organizaciones, por ejemplo, Centro de Trabajadores, fue el trabajo colectivo que hicimos organizar adentro del rancho, formar un comité.
So what gave the lawsuit came from working inside of the farm, trying to form a committee of workers with the Worker Center of Central New York. So that was the basis of it.
Uh-huh. So you guys got together, you created this lawsuit, the Worker Center of New York helped you bring that suit.
Well, it is the lawsuit is based on organizing work. So the lawsuit was not like we're just going to go there and have a lawsuit. No, it came out of an effort to organize.
Oh, I see. You were trying to unionize.
Yeah, well, simply to have workers talk to each other and form a committee, not even a union.
Wow.
So basically, that was at the base. So voy a hacer un poquito de cómo. So Crispin is now at this point. This is in around 2014 or 2013. Our work as the Worker Center is to educate workers about their rights.
Right.
And to help them to learn to organize, but some of them already know how to organize. You come together and learn and educate yourself, and then you can collectively do something about the issues. Usually when you're one person in a workplace, employers get rid of you, and
right,
that happens everywhere.
Right, that's going to happen.
You know,
especially
that happens everywhere.
Are you documented workers? Do you have green card, or are you?
Most of the workers in this workforce are undocumented. So that's another very important barrier to.
Of course. I think this is why we don't have immigration reform. This is my particular belief. We don't have immigration reform or a fair immigration policy in this country because companies like this and the meat industry and the field workers, they don't want you guys to organize because they don't want to pay the money. They don't want to pay for insurance. They don't want to pay for, benefits of any kind. So,
one side they said, hey, you shouldn't come because you should do it the right way. And the other way is like, hey, come. And we need you. So Crispin at this point, we do outreach, we go and talk to workers. That's how we met Crispin and other workers. And then learning through these trainings that we were doing around health and safety, that's what worker centers do. Worker centers are kind of like in many, many places, and they are all, most of them, independent. We belong, some of us, to some coalition, stuff like that. But most of them are kind of a response to, people needing support in the workplaces, especially immigrant workers.
Yeah.
So our center goes out there and does education. You know, we go directly to the house where they live, which is usually at the farm.
Yes.
So they are
like in barracks, right?
In this place.
Dormitories. Dormitorios.
It's trailers. Or sometimes the owners have bought houses around, and they provide housing. If they didn't provide housing, they probably wouldn't have workers.
Right.
Because the local people do not go to work there, and the farm workers who come from Latin America are not from that community. They might not have transportation. So they need the housing. So the housing is good for the employers, mostly. I will say, now they have a workforce that is right there, always available, and that's that.
And do they give that housing to you for free, or do you have to pay rent?
Les dan las casas gratis o pagan renta.
Eso lo, las casas logramos que se mejoró en el 2013,
pero en general.
En general sí le cobran como $18.95 a la semana.
So there's, in general, in that particular farm, they used to not charge rent.
Right.
But eventually, through some organizing and some advocacy, the housing got better and the employer started charging. But they can only charge up to certain amount according to the Department of Labor.
Uh-huh.
There are some violations on that in other farms. But in this particular farm, they charge $18.95 a week because they only get one room and they share the house. But in general, employers have the possibility to charge. Many of them do not because, the housings are not very good. And also, it's kind of a source of, workers will go where they're not charged.
Sure.
But they're able, some of them charge and some of them don't. In this particular, they do now. But what I was also, talking more about we meet with these workers. Crispina is one of the worker leaders trying to form this committee because aside from the issue of not getting, you know, medical attention or support from the employers, also there had been an incident where a farm worker had been, you know, violently fired. And so those things add up, and now we have a presence in that farm. We're talking to workers. They know us. But Crispin wanted to do more. You know, I think we have been talking about this. You know, what is your motivation around this work, you know? Because not everyone wants to take step further to do something.
Well, you're never going to get hired by a dairy farm again,
not
right?
Not anymore. but that's what I think he came to the United States from Mexico very already impacted by the reality of the dairies, because when he was in Oaxaca, in his state of Oaxaca, in 2012, a 17-year-old from the United States, from upstate New York, the body of a young worker named Genaro, who was 20 years old, from his same community, was coming back.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so he had died at a dairy.
Yeah.
So this was seen by his family, by his community, and of course it had a very deep impact in him. And he talks, and he just talked here about how that made him feel and how his family didn't want him to come.
Yeah.
After seeing that, of course, but he saw the necessity and to support his family and himself.
Sure.
So he comes, so he has that now. He's seen what are the consequences, and then he goes through that that experience of having been to an accident, and then but then realizing that it can be worse. You know, you can die here.
Yeah.
And so and he's seen it.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think Crispin got in touch with us also to ask us about that worker. He wanted to know if we knew him, if we have been at the farm where he died. And we actually, at that point in 2013, when he gets in touch with us, we had been investigating about the dairy farms, health and safety, and the fatalities. And we've been, and so when he tells us that, I'm thinking, well, we've been looking for this young man. Where is he from? You know, to talk to his family, to see what
sure.
happened to them. So we made that connection, and we were able to talk to the family of Genaro. And then Crispin even was able to get us a picture of that young man. And then we went to the farm, and eventually I think he went to that farm and talked to other workers who knew him and kind of to get the story of how he died. You know, and Genaro was at that farm, and he had been there for some time, and then new workers came in, and he wanted to show them how, you know, what to expect working there. And he goes and show them a skid steer, it's called. It's like a little mini tractor.
Sure, and a then, skid steer.
Yes,
yes,
skid steer.
I'm familiar.
And then the new workers get on it, and they are and then they didn't know how to use it. And
so they ran over him.
They crashed him. Yeah, it was a horrible accident.
Yeah, really horrible. Yeah.
And then so this is how we connect. We're very concerned about, you know, the conditions. And so here we have somebody who already seen that, and he was very young, but he started to get involved more and more, and
right.
other workers too. And we created a group of workers that actually helped to bring these issues to OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration,
yes.
locally. We had a delegation of workers talking to the local OSHA to tell them, hey, these accidents are happening, these fatalities, and this is what we want. So to get to that, we had to educate workers. We had to them also educate us, because I never worked at a dairy.
You don't know what's going on
no,
there.
No, I never yeah. worked at a dairy as an organizer. I need, and of course I don't know anything. They are teaching me, and we are teaching them that, hey, there's something that we can do. We can change this story. And then we met another worker at that same farm who, in a span of 2 weeks, had 3 accidents. And he had worked at restaurants, and he said, you know what, I'm going to go back to work at restaurants, because here I feel like I'm going to die. My life is worth more than minimum wage. And so this worker also helped us to create a video talking about his experience.
Right.
And then he was part of this delegation of workers who went to OCHA and said, you know, I have worked in small farms, medium farm, large farm, and here are the scars of the things that have happened to me. And then we asked them to do to start a local emphasis programs on dairies, which is about surprise inspections in areas or industries where have high fatalities or had high problems with
high accident rates. Yeah,
and we actually they did it. They started it, and because this was different in the past, we have come with stories about problems at the farms, but not. It's not the same if we as advocates, as organizers, talk about it than when a worker that experienced and can show you, you know, this is my story and this is what happened to me. And this was different. This was workers taking leadership, telling their own stories, and that had an impact. And so we were doing that, and we continue. And so Crispin eventually joins this group of workers, and we start. So now we have the local emphasis program, but then the industry starts to fight back, you know, against us, and they try to get the politicians involved, and they got the politicians involved, and then we had our local congressmen, 7 of them, writing a letter to saying to OSHA, do not do this, you know, the farmers, they care about their workers, and they don't need this, and, you know, we don't want regulations, you know, they know what they're doing. But what they didn't count on is that this didn't come out of the blue, you know. This right. was an effort, a grassroots effort. So we started to have meetings with the politicians. And, you know, some of them, we could expect of them to have that position because they were conservative and anti-regulation and they didn't care.
Yeah.
And in their community, they represent the interests of the farmers because those are the ones who vote. They don't care about the people who don't vote.
Pay for their campaigns.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, but we also, there was one of them who was a Democrat from an urban area in Syracuse, and we went and talked to him. And we knew that it was going to be very difficult. We were going that route, but it was important to get the politicians, educate them, and also tell the community, hey, this is they're representing you, and they should represent also the interest of workers
right.
in general.
Right,
because
right.
these are workers. Whether you think that they are immigrants or whatever, they you know, we all do better if the people, you know, who has the hardest conditions, if we raise the bar, you know, we all are going to do better. And also, it cannot be that in New York, where we are sometimes the third or the fourth state with the biggest production of milk, that this is how our milk is being produced. So
right.
we started to talk about, you know, that we want justice-fortified milk, for example, or that milk is contaminated with the blood of the workers. And that was a symbolic book, you know.
Rebecca!
But yeah, we started to tell them, and we started to bring them,
yeah.
you know. And we even, to my farm, we at some point when Crispin starts being more involved and he sees that, hey, we need to do something in here at the farm. At this point, we're doing it outside, right? The local emphasis program, you know, speaking up outside. And then, but we got to do something inside. So when they started at the farm recognizing that he was part of this group and they started to retaliate against him.
Yeah.
And the work that we did together was to support him in that time because it's very difficult to be at a workplace. Also, you live there and then the employers and the supervisors and everybody's against you. So what do? Usually you're going to quit
yeah.
because you don't want to go through that stress, you know. But if here we have the mindset of organizing and then changing things, you gotta resist. You gotta, so that we can continue the work because once you leave and also create leadership with other workers. So that's how we get to around August of 2014 when we had a meeting with about 5 workers, it was a small group, inside of the trailer where they live. And I was invited to talk to them and tell them, you know, what is the idea? Crispin was telling them about the idea, but we were saying, hey, we're an organization and we want to support you.
Right.
You know, because, you know, we believe also there shouldn't be violence here with the supervisor. There shouldn't be, you know, problems in the with the housing or how you're treated and all this. And they liked the idea, and we were having a nice meeting when we get a knock on the door, and it's the son of the employer. And he basically told me, you need to leave right now.
Yeah.
And this was around 7 p.m. And I said, you know, I had talked to the workers before. Be aware that there might be some retaliation. We might get some, but we are ready here. I have your permission to be here, and you have the right to receive visitors, even though this is the property of the employer. So we had that understanding. We had that preparation. So when the employer comes over, you know, we had worked over a little bit the fear. And so I said, I'm not leaving. I have their permission. And the workers were supporting me.
Yeah.
And so the son of the owner said, you know what? I'm not going to discuss this more with you. I'm going to call the police.
Okay, let's stop right there. We have to take a short break, and we'll be right back with Rebecca Fuentes and Crispin Hernandez from the Worker Center of Central New York. Stay tuned for the rest of this story. We'll be right back.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
So the guy comes in, he says, I'm going to call the police, you have to leave, and what did you do?
So at this point, it was about 30 minutes that we were just, you know, continuing with our meeting, but still having some fear that he was going to call the police. And the police, calling the police on immigrant workers, you know, regardless of their status, it's bad, you know. It's something that can put, from the thinking about the employers, it's like, hey, you're putting your workforce at risk. You know, you can lose five workers right now.
Yeah.
And also for the workers, it's like, well, I can not only get in trouble, but maybe even be deported, you know, if I don't have a status. But we were a team there, you know, and we were like, we're going to help each other. And I knew that there was some backing by the law that they can receive visitors, no?
Yeah.
And so we had a booklet with from the Department of Labor that said that workers have the right to receive visitors. It's kind of iffy, but, you know, it's not. Sometimes it's very it's violated all the time, but isn't what you do with it. It's just that you use it as a tool.
Yeah.
You know, this is what I'm going to tell the police, you know, and now they're going to have to struggle with it. I mean, they know that. I know, so we're going to see where. And so we were preparing ourselves, and we were very positive. And so the police actually shows up, and not only the local police, it's the state police.
Yikes.
So you have the state troopers and the local sheriff.
Right.
And totally waste of resources, you know.
Ridiculous, yeah.
But it's totally part of the intimidation.
And were you removed?
So what they do is they said, you know, that they were concerned about safety. I don't know of who. But then they separated us. So the implication was that I was doing there something illegal. and they were gonna find out what, and the employer was very worried about his workers because maybe I just, you know, stormed
in. Maybe what, you were gonna steal their money?
Yes, there were some insinuations that I was kind of like
you were gonna exploit.
Yes,
your
in many
fellow,
different ways.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And so the questions they were asking me, and they separated us, is like, how often do you come here? You know, what do? You go to other houses? You know, and then I told the police and, you know, officer, I said, you know what the employer is doing here, you know. I'm sure you might belong to a union, and you know what employers do sometimes when you try to organize. I said, you are being used willingly for this. And then the workers were also questioned if they had if I have their permission to be there. And they just couldn't do anything, you know. And there was... But still, at the end of the interrogation, the one of the police officers tell me, so what, are you going to stay or you're going to leave? You know, basically testing if their intimidation is working.
Right.
You know, and I felt very strongly that I needed to stay.
Yeah.
The workers, so that the workers can have also the feeling of, they had my back, I had theirs, and then we had succeeded in this effort, you know. And so we stay, we finish our meeting.
Yeah.
But a week later, we have another meeting, and only Crispin and another worker showed up because the intimidation worked on the other workers.
Right.
Eventually, they don't want to get in more trouble. So we are defining here who is the leaders here, and it was Crispin
was
very important.
And the other guy.
And he was, and Saul. And so we have the meeting, and then the next day, both of them get fired.
Yeah.
And so that's how it usually
happens.
That's
how it works. So
always.
Now what needs to change? Like how can you affect change where guys like Crispin and his colleagues are protected from these tactics? Do you need to have a union? I mean, what's the answer here?
¿Cuál es la respuesta? Organizar.
¿Qué pienso?
Pues ahorita lo que hemos hecho es el trabajo colectivo, por eso se ganó, por ejemplo, el caso legal, pero también recientemente pasó también a las leyes justas para nosotros los trabajadores agrícolas, y ahorita ya es ley. Y
so working collectively, and for example, we won the lawsuit, and then now we have
legislation. The lawsuit gave you what? What did the lawsuit win
so
for
que
you
nos
exactly?
Dio la demanda.
You got to organize as a group and demand a better contract, or what happened?
¿Qué ganamos con la demanda?
Sí, que los trabajadores pueden organizar y negociar colectivamente con los patrones.
So you could negotiate as a group.
Yeah,
okay.
So we want collective bargaining and the right to belong to a union.
Right.
Because of that lawsuit. And the lawsuit came from that we just described.
Right.
So once he gets fired, then usually the story ends there, right?
Yeah.
So usually you got fired. But because we're organizing and because we have, as a very small nonprofit organization, but we've been, you know, partnering with other organizations and also with the community, we had their back, and they were not just left in the dust. You know, we supporting them, and then they got more involved, and then we did a big rally at the farm. We presented 1,000 signatures with a petition where we were saying, your workers, all the workers should have the right to receive visitors. They have if they might not have the right, the law, to form unions or to collectively bargain or whatever, they have the freedom of association. They have the human right to receive visitors and to organize. And so that was the framing, you know. And so we did that, and still the injustice was still there. So we now also involve who's buying the milk, you know, the cooperative, Dairy Farmers of America. We go to Dairy Farmers of America. We also, we go over there, we present them with a letter, we requested a meeting, so we confront them. You know, one of your member farms is doing this, and what are you going to do about it? You have a code of conduct for suppliers that says that these things should not happen.
Right.
So what are you doing? And then they send us a nice letter saying that they value, you know, these things and that, and they just totally make it totally dismissed it.
So they blew you off.
Right.
They basically said,
we're saying,
very
okay,
nice.
Who's next? Who's next? And then we also, at that point, we published a report, and it's called The Milked Dairy Farm Workers in Upstate New York. And it's on, the people can read it on milkedny.org. And it's
M-I-L-K-E-D.
Right. And it's based on 88 interviews of dairy farm workers.
Cool.
And so that, you know, we present that report, and a lot of people start getting educated about it. And we ask people to also go a step further and talk to Chobani, because Chobani gets milk from dairy farms, America, among others. But we're saying, hey, we need to go to who's making the most money here and who's making the most.
Right.
And so when you see the pie, you know, it's usually the processor. So we go,
right. We
start having meetings with Chobani, educating them about what is happening. And then we also get the backing of the NYCLU, and they become they represent us in this lawsuit, because in New York we have the Constitution of New York does not exclude farm workers. The exclusion of farm workers from the right to organize, collectively bargain, overtime pay, and day off is a federal exclusion.
Ah.
So it is not, but each state can do better.
Can do what they want.
Constitution of New York is not does not exclude them, but there's a law. There was a law in New York that did exclude them.
Right.
And so we said our lawsuit was based on that shouldn't be. The Constitution is very clear. So our lawsuit was filed in May 10 of 2016.
Uh-huh.
We went to the Albany, and it was against the state of New York and the governor. And immediately after we filed the lawsuit, the governor and the attorney general said, hey, we support you. We're on your side. We're not going to fight you.
Right.
So basically, we're like, hey, we won. But the industry being what it is and having a lot of resources and power, they intervene in our lawsuit. So the Farm Bureau of New York spend thousands, even millions of dollars in their legal teams and everything to fight our lawsuit.
Right.
So, and the plaintiff was Crispin Hernandez, the Worker Center of Central New York, and the Worker Justice Center. So they intervened in our lawsuit, and it took about 2 years. The first time it was dismissed, I think it was, I don't know what they call it, but we appealed.
Right.
And in May 25th, it was ruled in our favor.
That amazing.
In New York, workers.
So that took
workers,
like 3 years.
Yes.
Wow.
But while that is happening, we are also organizing. We organize around driver licenses for immigrants in New York. And that was a good way to get more workers. They might feel sometimes that fighting the boss or doing organizing around the workplace issues put them at risk, or is organizing around having a driver license, it's a little bit different. And so because it's about, hey, I did really want this, and that's not gonna
right.
But you will think that the farm owners will be supportive of that, but we never got their support, not from the whole industry.
Well, it means you're not a captive audience anymore.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, we have to wrap this up, but I want you to go back to, just to let people know again, it's milkedny.org, O-R-G. And so people can read 88 interviews with people like Crispin.
And it's a basic
about
report.
This fight.
Yeah, it's a report
to organize.
Based on it. And it's all... And you learn a lot about the industry in New York, and you learn about the answers to... It was around 200 questions.
Amazing.
For all these workers, and Crispin was part of that, and 88, 87 other workers from different farms in upstate, with questions around how do you feel about working here, but also how do you feel in this community? How do you relate to this community? How do you feel they treat you? And so one of the things, and he mentioned it today, Crispin, cuando hablamos de cómo se sienten los trabajadores trabajando en un rancho y que se les preguntó, ¿crees que el patrón se preocupa más por ti o por las vacas, no? Entonces.
Sí, los patrones, explotan mucho a los trabajadores y tratan mejor a las vacas que a los
trabajadores. So you're saying that they exploit the workers and they treat the cows better than they do the humans.
That was one of the questions. And
yeah. And that has
most
continued.
Of the workers,
that
yeah,
persists
we'll say that.
To this day. Even though you are not working on the dairy farm anymore, you still have obviously friends and community there. So the attitudes have not really changed.
Well, we have improvements. We have improvements right. in health and safety because of the local emphasis programs. We now, starting in January, workers are going to have not only the right to collectively bargain and be in unions and also join organizations like ours. Ours yeah. are membership-based, but also because of legislation that passed in June, they will have overtime pay after 60 hours, which should be after 40, but it will be 60 as an improvement.
Jesus.
And the right to a day off
yeah.
before, if the employer didn't want to give you a day off, it was not against the law. So that's why we're saying we organize outside of the law, because the law is not a tool there.
Right.
But now we're going to have all of that, and that's a lot of improvement. Workers,
huge.
Immigrant, undocumented will be able to have access to driver licenses,
yeah.
which is freedom for a lot of
Absolutely.
Them. And also then they'll be able to do whatever they want and not be a captive in the farm.
Yeah.
So there's good things, but the message here is this gets accomplished through collective action and through grassroots organizing.
Right.
And it takes a lot of work, and it's not work that is well-funded, but it's work that happens thanks to the partnership with other social justice organizations and the bravery of workers like Crispin.
That's right.
And many, many others that continue right now in the organization. So our organization, like I said, members-based, so we represent the interest of farm workers, and we're very proud of that. And that's the only, just, this is what we tell workers and what we tell owners. It's like just as the farm owners have their organization that represent them, then workers should have the right to have organizations that represent them. And this is a model of organizing and that I think has always worked, but this system does not support it, you know, never. We are a very individualistic society, capitalist, where it's like, you know, if you don't like it here, then go somewhere else. You
yeah.
know, that's the
well,
answer.
We are, yeah. yeah, right, right. Well, Rebecca Fuentes and Crispin Hernandez, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate your time.
Que muchas gracias.
Fascinating story.
Muchas
I mean,
gracias.
I hope to stay in touch, please, mm-hmm. and keep me posted about right. further developments and what's going on. This
yeah,
is
I mean,
a really
something important
eye-opening experience.
What we're doing right now is communicating with Giovanni
yep.
and putting them to task on that a lot of corporations like them or a lot of businesses like them, and they are going the route of let's do a certification program, you know.
Right.
And that's not always the answer. It depends on the certification program. There are some good ones like Milk with Dignity. There are
right.
others in Vermont. But there are others that are not very well not very good, and they only respond to, you know, that they have a lot of money and they can put money on that certification program, and it's just like a little, you know, sticker, and people
sure.
can be very deceiving, and what we want to tell, what we're telling Giovanni is that now in New York we have the protected right to organize. You should be very vocal in saying, as a progressive company or as a company that care about
yeah.
social you know, the community and all of this stuff, you should be very vocal in saying if workers organize in within the food chain of Giovanni, we will not be on, we will be supportive. And then, and if they're going to put a certification program, how is that certification program going to support workers when they
right.
want to organize
right.
into unions? So,
well, keep us posted. And
okay.
thank you so much for your time today.
Thank
I really
you.
Appreciate it. Great story. Really, really interesting discussion.
Thank
you both.
What Doesn't Kill You is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awali, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries, like why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.